Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Please note, season one of this podcast was recorded before the passing of our beloved Suzanne Summers. Suzanne, we love you, we miss you, and this podcast is dedicated to you.
We're two stepsisters bonded, living Hollywood life. Even if one of us is watching for the very first time, all the good, the bad, the barky, take a peek inside. Let's rewatch and relive the good times. Keenan and they can give you deja vu.
Hi. This is Keenan and Lakin Give You Deja Vu, the rewatch podcast where we will take turns breaking down every episode of the 90s sitcom step by step in order. I'm Stacey Keenan and I played Dana Foster.
And I'm Christine Lakin and I played Al Lambert.
We're going to tell you how it really went down because we were there. Now, for me, this is my first time ever watching the show. I never watched it. Not then and not until now for purposes of this very podcast.
It's very exciting. I find that your shock at so many of the things that have happened, it's quite entertaining for me. I just showed Stacey, I brought over a bunch of pictures and photo albums that I had just recently gone through and sort of taken from my childhood home, and now they're all shoved into one big drawer. But I had started going through them, and I just brought you a bunch of them today to just, you know, jog your memory about stuff. And there's specific pictures from the pilot and the first year of the show that my mother painstakingly photographed and documented. They're pretty fun to look through. Definitely gets the memory going.
It's such a mom thing to feel that it's your job to be the historian.
Yes.
To show up, to take the photos, then to, back in those days, develop those photos, put them all in this perfect little photo album that you have here, you know, kind of save, you know, your kids' memories for them or the family's memories. I mean, I'm sure there are men that do that too, but it seems traditionally women have been the ones that feel that it's their part of their role to document all that stuff. My mom definitely did too. My mom would be standing around the set with this big camera with this big lens taking photos and putting that all in scrapbooks. And, you know, it's such a big service that moms, parents, whoever does that for their kid, you know, to do that for someone is really something to know that a kid is not going to take the time or put in the effort to save any of that, to document any of that.
Well, and this is now the problem. You know, I have 22,000 photos in my cloud. And I'm like, what the hell do I do with these?
Yeah.
I have to start making books or something, or I've got to put them in, I don't know, hard drives. Like, so impersonal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What do you do now?
I don't know. It's the thing that keeps me up at night. But I try not to think about.
I mean, at the same time, back in the day when you had all these paper photos, you know, yeah, you made some photo albums and scrapbooks right. and stuff, but then you had boxes and boxes of these other photos. It's kind of just like the hard drive, except it's actually taking up space in your house.
Yes.
So, yeah, I have those boxes and boxes of paper photos. And yeah, what
I had to do exactly? I threw so many photos out. When I went through my parents' house.
Really?
They were like, here's all your stuff. Here's your life. What do you want?
Wow.
And I kept, obviously, all the photo albums. And then there were boxes of photos. Yeah. And you're looking through them, and some of them, they're blurry, or the eyes are closed, or we don't need 15. Maybe we just need one.
Yeah.
We don't need, you know, Jim Lakin, my father, we would, like, laugh because my dad would just be documenting. He would just be documenting. And so we would get the pictures back, and my mom would go, oh, he takes so many pictures. You know, my mom was always like, Jim. Because, like, sometimes we wouldn't even be looking, but, you know, they're all these, like, behind the scenes.
But he's documenting the moment.
Documenting. And eventually you just have to, you have to trim the fat.
Good for you. Yeah. You got to be able to let stuff go.
Took me, like, 3 days that I went
hard.
Yeah, it's hard.
There's a lot of emotion connected to that stuff. Well, this time we are covering, I actually will be recapping Season 1, Episode 9, This is Into the Woods, with an original air date of November 15th, 1991. So, in this one, Frank announces that the family is going on a family camping trip to this beautiful, amazing, secluded, picturesque spot called Dead Man's Clearing. And not surprisingly, the Fosters are super anti this. Now, Carol is anti as well. But as Carol tells Dana, you know, look, I'm not into camping either, but it's important for us to do things together, to do things as a family, you know, trying to join this family together to create some unity between the Fosters and the Lamberts is what Carol is thinking here. And then Dana says, we do things together, like have vicious, ugly fights. Which I liked.
I did too. I thought it was funny.
We see Cody, because of course, Cody's a Lambert.
He's
part of the Lambert clan. He is reminiscing about Dead Man's Clearing, and the stories are all about leeches and getting his head caught in a bear trap and about getting bitten by a snake. So one of the kind of fun things about this episode to me was that it does ask this essential question. Why do people go camping?
Right.
The whole storyline is querying that.
Yeah.
Why do we do this?
Why do we go? Why do we try to trap and kill our own food? Why are we sleeping on a hard ground?
What exactly is going on here? Which I really do understand that question. I mean, look, I get it in some ways, and I do myself, I do kind of like to camp, and I absolutely loved Cheryl Strayed, her autobiography or her memoir, if you will, Wild, which is all about her solo hiking as a way to heal from loss and addiction. Believe me, I get it. But at the same time, sometimes I don't get it. Why do we pack up our car to the bursting sometimes?
I know.
With stuff so that we can go and recreate our...
What we had at home.
What we had at home, but out in the... I don't know.
I think it's like for me, because we almost went camping this weekend and then we just decided we didn't want to go through with the drive. We were going to spend more time at home. But when I actually think about all the stuff you need, especially when you have kids and you go camping.
Oh, for kids, yeah.
And you're packing your entire car full of all of these essentials and the what ifs and the maybes. It does become, at least you do start to ask yourself that question. Like I say to Brandon all the time, well, you know, maybe we should start off. We'll just do some camping in the backyard. Let's just start small because then we don't really have to pack that much stuff and we can just go to the backyard. It'd be fun for the kids. We'll do something different. We have a fire pit out there. Maybe we'll like roast
some marshmallows.
Some weenies and some marshmallows by the fire. And then Brandon always nods and then he goes, or we could just sleep in our own beds. And I was like, okay, but that's the thing. If you're away, then you have no choice but to disconnect. You don't have service. You turn off your phone.
Yeah.
You get out into nature. You reconnect with each other. You look at each other. You find things to do to fight off boredom. I think it's meant to be this sort of diet of technology and you know, reconnection to the earth.
That's a good point. And it is true that sitting around a campfire at night and that smell that a campfire has, and it's dark and you can only kind of see everybody who's sitting around by the mm-hmm. flickering of the firelight. And then people are telling stories and, you know, telling stories in a different way than they do at a dinner party or something like that.
So much time to kill.
Yeah. And you start getting into ghost stories and, you know, and just playing games. And it's just, there's just something kind of beautiful and fundamental about it. So I get it, but also sometimes I don't get it.
My mother always says, my mother kind of reminds me of Carol a little bit in this episode.
Yeah.
She's always like, my version of camping is at a Holiday Inn.
Yes, yes, darling. Exactly.
And I think she says something like that. My idea of roughing it is slow room service. I was like, oh my God, that's my mom to a T. Wait, I have to say one other thing because Mark, as everybody's complaining on the foster side of like, why do we have to do this? Mark looks at Carol and goes, please, we're your real children. Which made me laugh so hard. Okay.
LOLing in the living room. So now that's it. Carol has spoken. Frank has spoken. The camping trip is happening. Like it or not, it's happening. So now everyone, you know, days later, whatever it is gathering in the living room and they have their gear. And the Lamberts are clearly very serious. You know, they have their insect repellent and they, you know, they're ready to hunt and fish and do all this stuff. So now here come the Fosters. And of course, the Fosters, their preparation is a little different. So Dana rolls in. She's got a boombox. She's got video games and batteries. Then Carol shows up with a cooler that she announces. She comes hustling in with this enormous cooler and she goes, and I've got the Ratatouille.
Like, what a random thing.
Well, of all the things, she decided that what? A French vegetable terrine. A terrine was the thing that we need for this camping trip. And then on top of that, see, I don't remember that Carol was a foodie, but aside from the Ratatouille that she has packed up in her gourmet cooler there, she's got liver pate and smoked salmon and also a super adorable little tinned ham. And then Frank gets highly famished at all this and he says, no, we are going to hunt. We are going to fish. We're going to live off the land. So this is the two schools of thought coming together to embark on this camping trip.
Now that kind of camping does not interest me. I don't want to, you know, trap squirrels.
No.
No.
That's a hard eating. No. And that is strictly for the hardcore. I mean, do people do that?
Listen, if I ever go on Survivor, I'm going to have to.
Are you going on Survivor?
I don't know. I've been thinking about it.
Are you serious?
I love that show. I'm obsessed with Survivor. Do you not know this?
Is it still on?
Yes. Yes. Okay. I've been watching it since the beginning.
Oh my God.
Now, listen, they do give you a small thing of rice every day, but you have to find coconuts. You have to fish. You might have to eat a crab or a snail. Or something
the crab and the, you know, sushi, basically.
Right. I mean, I know how to clean a fish, so I could do that, but it's catching the fish with a spear.
Yeah.
Sounds tough.
It seems really hard.
Yeah.
It looks easy, but it's
I don't think it is.
Super, super hard, I think. I've never done it, but it looks hard.
Again, fun for maybe a day. And then after like 12, I'm like, I'm dying out here.
We're done. Okay. So now the family arrives at this much discussed and storied Dead Man's Clearing. And then Karen arrives and announces that she's found the perfect rock for a pedicure stand. What is a pedicure stand, you're asking? I don't know. That doesn't exist. They made up some girly, froofy thing for Karen to say that she needed.
Yes. Raise her foot to an elevation that she could get the nail polish
perfect,
on perfectly.
I don't know what that is, but that's what she has found. And where did she find it? Oh, she found it right behind the back tire of Frank's truck.
Uh-oh.
And then we hear an enormous splash. And then we actually see a truck go into a lake.
It's a stock shot.
Yes. Yes, indeed. You can tell. It looks different. It has a whole different kind of vibe.
Ages. A stock shot was when you needed to show something and you weren't going to probably go out and film that thing.
You weren't going to take your own crew and your own people and create that actual thing and film it.
But if you could find a shot that someone else had already shot, you could buy that shot for however much money. And a lot of times they do this on TV shows and movies all the time, especially if it's an overhead of Los Angeles. Well, you might not need to get your whole
crew. You don't need to hire a drone or a helicopter.
There's plenty of stock shots of Los Angeles.
Yes.
And you just pick the one you want, you pay a licensing fee, and that's it.
Yeah. So a lot of reality shows that are supposed to take place in LA, you'll see those shots. You recognize them. They do look different where it's the Hollywood sign and then it's the skyline of downtown LA. And yeah, you can tell that they're stock shots. And that's what this is. And this truck is wheels up, by the
way.
It is upside down in the lake. So now everyone is stranded. So on top of it, they're stranded because, it's already been stated multiple times. They are 20 miles from anything. 20 miles from the ranger station, and the ranger comes by once a week.
Just to check it out. Just to make sure everyone's okay.
Yeah, and Frank is surprisingly chill for someone who just had his truck totaled. He said, most will just be stranded for 6 days, and then, you know, yeah, we'll just winch it out, we'll dry it off. Hey, if it smells like catfish for a few months, wouldn't be the first time. He is surprisingly chill for someone who just had one of their stepchildren total their car.
Also, that tiny rock was keeping the entire truck from going into
It was a perfect pedicure stand, Lakin, so I don't know what your problem is.
Okay.
But of course, the Fosters are absolutely devastated because this nightmare is now a trap. Literally, they are trapped. So now, cut to the campfire that night.
Wait, I think we also must comment on this set because this was a full forest. It looks like it's actually a really good set. It looks like a forest, but even my husband said, where did you shoot this? And I said, on a soundstage.
I remember this one very, very well.
Me too, because I loved playing in that forest. I did. I loved walking through it. I felt like I was in, if you've ever been to Universal Studios and you went on the ET ride, there was a smell when you'd go on the ET ride. I'm sure they pumped it in. But when you're in that forest and you're on the bike, it's, you know, you're on the ride, but you're on the bike and ET's in front of you in the basket and you're like flying through this forest of redwood trees. And it's like a really magical ride. This set reminded me of that.
Oh, wow.
I loved it.
Yeah. It was quite the set. They did really go all out and create this wilderness area. But yes, so now it's nighttime there in the forest and Frank has cooked up some kind of bushmeat stew after he and the rest of the Lamberts, quote, hunted up some grub. Meanwhile, poor little blonde Mark, is freaking out at every sound because it's nighttime. So he hears crickets and he's jumping up. What is that? And little Brendan is saying, it's crickets. Sit down. And then, you know, this hooting happens. What's that? It's an owl. You know, relax. And then Al says, geez, haven't you ever been in the woods at night? And he says, I've never been anywhere at night. Which I kind of liked. So now not everyone. The Fosters are super unhappy about this bushmeat stew.
Which, by the way, looked gross.
It did. It looked terrible. So then all of a sudden, Karen sneaks out some kind of chocolate bar that she's been hiding, and she kind of, you know, manages to unwrap it, and she kind of sneaks away and she's eating it. And then Dana gets a wind of this and goes, get her! And everyone kind of pounces on Karen and wrestles this chocolate bar away from her.
She's on the ground. You're on top of her.
I'm on top of her.
And then Mark is on top of you.
Yes.
It was a full-on pile-on
of people,
once again.
Right. And then Carol, stop it! So Carol takes the chocolate bar away from Karen, and then Carol sneaks off to eat it. And then Frank steps in and confiscates it once and for all from Carol. So now we come back and we realize that they have been stranded here now for days. The ranger has not come by.
It's been 3 days.
Carol is absolutely miserable. You know, her hair is wild. She has dirt on her face. She is so, just to give you an idea of the extent of Carol's malaise, she actually does not want to get it on with Frank.
Yeah.
That's how dire the situation is because Frank is, he has, I don't know, he somehow thinks that it's going to be a great idea. He suggests to Carol that they should sneak off into the woods and kind of get it on.
Like go take a bath in the lake together.
Right. And Carol informs him that he stinks. She's attracting flies. That lake that they're going to, you know, have this blue lagoon scene in is 40 degrees and full of, you know, God knows what, and a truck at this point. So that's how bad it is. That Carol does not want to get it on at Frank. So just to give you an idea. So now Dana decides to sneak off and hike the 20 miles. Again, Dana is trying to end up on a true crime documentary or podcast.
Yes.
This yes. is now the second episode in a row where Dana is trying to end up in a serial killer's lair.
This is just a precursor.
Cabin in the woods.
Yep. Or a precursor to, you know, Reese Witherspoon in Wild.
Yes.
You know, she's got the backpack on.
Got the backpack. Now, I must say, Dana.
There's a lot of turtlenecks in this episode. I guess when you go camping, it means you wear a turtle. I don't know.
I don't know. But I must say, Dana's hair is the only one that's still pretty on point. The French braid is still
intact.
Quite smooth. So JT kind of pops out of the bushes and he has caught Dana. And it turns out, is he watching for Dana or looking out for her because he cares? No. Frank has basically told him that he needs to look out for Dana because Frank had, Frank is smart and he knew that Dana might try to pull something like this. And JT warns Dana, and it has been brought up before, hey, there's bears out here. You can't just go hiking 20 miles by yourself. And then all of a sudden, what do we hear but a roaring sound? And there's a bear there.
A live bear.
This is not a stock shot, people.
This was a real bear.
And the bear shows up and the bear stands up on its hind legs and is roaring and waving its paws around. And when it stands up, it is not small.
No.
This bear is sizable.
Yes.
This bear is almost as big as my dog, just to give you an idea.
Yes. Almost.
Of how enormous this creature is.
Now, it's a trained bear. There was an animal wrangler and trainer. I was not in this scene, but I have to imagine that even a trained bear, probably slightly terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. You know, yeah. As someone who has, you know, done this show and done other productions, can we just stop using wild animals?
Ever.
Can we not do that anymore?
Yeah.
They shouldn't be actors. They shouldn't be on sets.
No.
You know, I mean, no one was mean to this bear. I never saw anything like that. And I was in the scene with the bear. I'm not saying that. It's just that even for a wild animal to have to be in that environment, it's just not right.
No.
You know, it just doesn't seem right.
They would never today. They would never even
really?
Write that scene. No, I don't think. I think the liability would be so high. I mean, even a bear. I've worked on shows with dogs. That's a completely different.
Yeah, that's a fully domesticated
dog,
animal.
A cat, you know, even a bird. Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A monkey, that gets a little, I feel like we're kind of on an edge of a
now
line
we're into
there.
Wild animals.
Now we're into wild animals. But yeah, I mean, a full-grown trained bear, I don't know, man.
Yeah, the bear was big. And you know, people say stinks like a bear. The bear stunk.
Oh, really?
To high heaven. They
really?
Do really, really stink. And this was not a wild bear running around in the woods.
Right.
I don't know where that bear lived, but he was a trained bear that worked on sets and he stank so Whoa. Bad. So
That's
the stinks
crazy.
Like a bear thing turns out is true. But I felt bad for him. I mean, I remember he had kind of a rolling crate that he stayed in and he was just in there just kind of rocking back and forth, you know? And like I say, whoever the handler was nice to him and everything
right.
like that. It's just, I don't know, just to have wild animals on sets. I wish we could not do that.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't remember being scared, but I'm sure I was, because to see an animal of that size who could rip your freaking head off if
right.
they felt like it.
Yep.
And to be close enough to them.
Yes.
Is
I mean, I imagine they gave you some kind of safety precaution, like if something went awry.
Yeah. I mean, I remember there was a lot of instructions, you know, don't touch the bear. Don't come near the bear. Don't do this. Don't do that. There was a full briefing of what mm-hmm. to do and what not to do around the bear. But still.
Yeah.
Now, you know, they have some shots in there of the bear rawr, giving these big roars. I don't believe the bear actually roared. I think the handler gave him a signal and he kind of opened his mouth a little bit, and yeah. then they went in later and they put in that roaring sound.
Yeah.
Or on the trainer's signal, he kind of bared his teeth or something like
sure.
that. But I don't think he was actually roaring like that on cue.
This would be my nightmare as a director.
Really?
This kind of episode would be a nightmare for me.
Because of the bear?
Yes.
Yeah.
The liability, the trying to get this wild animal to do things that you need it to do.
On cue. In a timely fashion.
Just like, this is the kind of episode that as a director makes me roll my eyes and be like, why? Why Do we need to do this?
Yeah. Can we please stop this? So then Frank shows up because Dana and JT are frozen. They don't know what to do. Should they run away? Do they not move? No one knows. Frank shows up. And this was a really sweet father moment that Frank has where he tells both of them to take off.
I really feel like that was, if it hadn't already been in the script, that was probably a standards and practices thing where they're like, we need to get the kids out of there.
Yeah, maybe. So he tells them, you just slowly back away and make your way back to camp and I will deal with the bear. So Frank he's sacrificing himself for the kids. Now, meanwhile, I noticed that Dana and JT did not follow those directions whatsoever. They did not slowly back away. They ran.
They ran like kind bats of up out and of hell.
Yes. And left Frank there. And then Frank ingeniously pulls out that chocolate bar that he confiscated from Carol, who had confiscated it from Karen, and he throws it. And the bear takes off to get the chocolate bar and Frank makes his escape.
Yes.
So, yeah. So Frank manages to survive the situation. Spoiler alert, in case you thought Frank died at the hands of the bear, he didn't. So, yeah. Now, back at the ranch, right. Grandma is concerned because where are they?
They should have been back by now.
Right. And then Cody, guess what? He sets off to find them because once again, Cody is going to save the day. Next thing you know, we're back at home and everybody arrives. The ranger came early. So they weren't out there. They were out there for at least 3 days, but they didn't have to go the full 6 days because the ranger came by and, you know, I guess just winched out the truck. You know how it is when you just leave your truck in the bottom of a lake. Frank mentioned it was in 6 feet of water. You just leave your truck in 6 feet of water for, I don't know, more than three, but less than 6 days. You just winch it out, kind of run a towel over it and you're good to go.
You're fine. Nothing's wrong with it.
No problemo.
Begs the question. How were eight people in one pickup truck?
Well, some of the kids, we heard that some of the kids were in the way back. Some of the kids were in the flatbed.
We were in the flatbed, for sure.
Yeah, because Dana mentions her kidneys bouncing out of her back. So, yeah, another little safety issue there. So anyway, so now everyone is home and Carol has kind of come to Jesus and she tells Frank, you know, families are made up of individuals. And we need to respect our differences. Well, she hasn't really come to Jesus, sort of the opposite. She's come to Jesus in the sense that instead of seeking this, hey, we need to figure out how to do things together, even if it's stuff that we, the Fosters, don't like to do. She's kind of, I guess, come to Jesus the other way in terms of, you know, it's okay to have boundaries, if you will, or some things, you know, we're just going to have to recognize and respect that we're different. But Carol then points out she is still going to make Frank go to the 12-hour long Wagner, as she pronounces it, the Wagner Opera Festival. And then if Frank has a problem with that, then they can talk about it in the shower.
Right? He starts to then say, oh, no, not the... And then realizes, wait, the shower? And then you look up at the stairway, and there's Carol once again giving the come hither eyes.
The ba-ba-ba-boom look.
And he just bounds up the
and
stairs.
And they just disappear.
So you win some, you lose some.
Hop in the shower together. Oh, so God. There's Frank and Carol, horny for each other as ever, despite living in filth for these days. And then this episode has a tag, which I don't know if we've seen a tag in the other episodes so far.
No.
But it's just a little scene at the very, very end as the credits are rolling. And we see Cody has arrived up at Dead Man's Clearing to save the day. And of course, they're gone. They've already been saved by the ranger. So Cody actually doesn't get to save the day this time. So how do you like that? So it's Cody just kind of chatting with the bear.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know. One of them is really tall. The other one's blonde. Like, and we don't know who he's talking to. And then the camera pulls back and it's just him just chatting with this bear.
Chatting with the bear. So it was a little weird. The tag didn't really pay off. It didn't have any, you know, jokes that really hit or anything. It was kind of as if, well, we paid for this bear. So we're just going to squeeze the bear into one more scene.
And obviously, you know, Cody also has the ability to sort of speak to animals.
Yes.
And he's got all these, like, he's like, could be part psychic. He's kind of a super genius. He's a kickboxer.
He's a kickboxer. He fixes motorcycles. He does demolition work. He lives in a van.
He has these really esoteric thoughts about the universe.
But he's also super dumb.
Right.
All right. Well, so that's the episode.
Yeah.
That is our recap. Speaking of super fancy sets, such as this full-blown forest that was built on a soundstage. Why am I having problems talking today? I don't know. I think we're just going to have to roll with it. built on a soundstage at Culver Studios in Culver City, California. That was, you know, we were talking about it a few episodes ago, a really sweet, really cool little studio lot, yeah. But a very nice lot. And there was a lot going on there. And I think we should take a break and talk about that when we get back. Yes,
definitely.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And we're back. So on the Culver Studios lot at the time that we were at this stage of the show, season one, we hadn't yet moved all the way across town to the enormous, very different Warner Brothers studio lot. It turned out, and the way I found out about it was through our tutor at the time, and she was friends with a set tutor on a different production there. And she said, you know, they're filming this movie here. Do you want to come and meet Tom Cruise?
Yes.
the answer was yes. So they were
this studio was like very exclusive. It was tiny. And so sometimes when people would want a lot of privacy for something that was very, you know, had a lot of big stars in it. Like I remember Michael Jackson filmed a music video there and it was lock and key.
And
it was all in the back. And it was that video that had, again, a bunch of animals in it.
Yeah, it was a circus parade type of thing.
And they were filming this music video for like weeks in the back, but it was all like lock and key, high security, high privacy. So that was kind of, because there was only maybe six stages or something. So they were filming this movie, A Few Good Men.
Right. So our tutor, I just remember going over there and everybody was wearing their military uniforms.
It was Demi Moore.
Yes, and I met Demi Moore, and she was actually wearing the full-blown court outfit.
Court
so she
outfit.
Had the skirt suit uniform.
Yes.
Which was very impressive. She looked stunning.
And she was so nice.
Yes.
So sweet. I think she had a young child at that point. So, you know, she was very open to, I don't know how, it was like we found out from the tutor, and then one of the security people brought us over and they were on a break and we were kind of hanging out.
And they just introduced us.
And then they just like
everybody
brought us into the set. And they, I mean, it was amazing. She was so nice and so like warm and
just lovely.
Yeah, lovely.
And then I remember meeting Tom Cruise.
Me too.
Yes. And he is shorter than you might think in real life. He's not teeny tiny.
No.
It's just that he's not 6'2", if you're thinking that that's
right.
What he was. But he was extremely professional, very nice.
Yes.
You know, nice to meet you, look you in the eye, shake your hand. Very nice.
I remember he shook my hand and I was just, you know, enamored with him. And he's just like so cute.
So cute.
Yeah. And so charismatic.
As good looking in person as he is in the movies.
And then he...
A real movie star.
And then he took his hand out to my mother who was standing behind me and he went, "Hi, Tom." Like this. And my mom shook his hand and my mom goes, "Oh, I know." I remember that moment so specifically and I was laughing so hard, but I was also like, "Mom, be cool."
Be cool. Dude. But I mean, he had the uniform on with the, you know, the whole look.
The whole nine yards.
And then for me, who I was maybe most excited to meet was Jack Nicholson.
I did not meet him.
As I absolutely freaking loved Jack Nicholson. He had to be one of my favorite actors, or my favorite actor, period, at that time.
Yeah.
And I met him, and he was also polite and nice. But even at that age, I noticed that he was a little drunk.
You did not. You did not.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Hilarious.
Yes. But he was still very nice and professional, everything like that. He had sunglasses on, and he had the uniform on and the whole thing. And many, many years later, as an adult, I happened to be in Atlanta for the Olympics.
Ah.
And we were with a big group of people, and we went to a strip club.
Hilarious.
You know, just okay. a thing to sure. do after a night out.
I mean, you know, in Atlanta, there are some very famous ones.
There were, it was fancy. It was really nice. It wasn't,
Cheetahs?
I don't remember the name, but it wasn't dark and dingy. It looked like Las Vegas. It was very fancy and new and everything.
Yeah.
And we were just there being kind of, I don't know. I haven't been to many strip clubs. It was fun, but it was just a little odd. But it was at this strip club, they had booths that were raked.
Mm.
So if you're on the main floor and you're sitting on the, at a booth that's on the floor level, if you look up, there are kind of tiers of these other booths. And there's Jack Nicholson standing there with sunglasses on, just shimmying and dancing in this circle of just topless ladies that were all shimmying and shaking all the way around him. And he was laughing. He was smiling. He was absolutely in heaven. And I thought, wow, what an iconic Jack Nicholson moment.
Yes.
Totally. You know, here he is in his element in the strip club, surrounded by all these women. Anyway, that was years later.
That's genius.
But it's still, of all the famous people, that was probably, and still, maybe the coolest one.
Definitely.
To meet Jack, to hear that voice in real life. I mean, even the fact that he was kind of buzzed, it was just, oh, that's so perfect.
Yes, Daisy, nice to meet you. You could just like imagine it, you know?
So perfect, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah, over the years, it was, I mean, there were many celebrity sightings, even when we moved to Warner Brothers, because stuff was always happening there. And there was a lot of changeover at that huge lot. You would hear rumors, you know, that so-and-so was on the lot. And then you'd kind of like be watching out for them when you would go to the commissary or walk to the gym or whatever. I was anyway.
Oh, yeah. The commissary is kind of like how it's portrayed sometimes in movies about behind the scenes Hollywood. It's a nice restaurant that's on the studio lot, and people go there for lunch, and people may go there to see and to be seen by the other denizens of the studio lot. Who are you lunching with?
Yep.
Who are you not lunching with? Maybe what table did you get? I mean, as a kid, I wasn't all the way up in the mix of the politics of all that. But, you know, it was definitely a thing. You know, who's sitting outside on the patio? What's going on?
I only went to the fancy restaurant in the commissary like a handful of times. I think we had a couple of lunches even there for the show. But there was a cafeteria that was connected to it. And that's sort of where, like, the normies went on the day to day. There was a big salad bar, and do you remember that? And there was like hot food, and then there was a sandwich thing, and you could get stuff to go. And you would see people there too, but it was mostly crew and you know, some cast members. But the best part of going to the commissary was walking by the stage two doors down, which is where they filmed ER. You guys. George Clooney. There were so many years. He would be outside playing basketball all the time. And you would know, you would walk out of stage 8 and I would hear the thump of the basketball and I'd be like, gotta go. And I would just walk by just to like try to catch a glimpse.
Just to eyeball him. And he would be wearing those blue scrubs all the time.
All the time.
And he looks so cute in those blue scrubs.
So cute. And he'd be playing with, you know, Anthony Edwards or like a crew member. Sometimes Jaleel White would be playing with him because their stage was right in the middle of
basketball.
Ours. Yeah. It was pretty fun. I'm trying to remember who else we saw in that. I mean, the whole cast of Friends was down the road too. And I think we were on stage 8. I think they were on like 6 or 26, something like that. And when my friends would come to town and I would take them around the lot, as I was known to do, I would show them where, oh, that's so-and-so's car. They all had Porsches.
Yeah, because everybody, if you're part of the, you know, the main cast, you would have a parking space on the lot and directly next to the stage.
It was very fancy.
It was really cool. I loved having my own parking spot. I thought that was really exciting once I was old enough to drive, and it had your name spray painted on it. Yep. And there was a little sign there. And as usual, everything's very hierarchical. So whoever's the biggest star on the show, their spot is going to be closest to the stage door.
Yeah.
And then the next spot over from that is going to be the next biggest star on the show.
Yeah.
So on our show, I'm sure, again, this was, you know, the 90s. It was probably Patrick first because he's the man.
Right.
And then Suzanne next to that, and then on and on and on, and all the, you know, the parking spots lined up, because otherwise you had to park off the lot somewhere and walk in. I mean, there was, you know, parking yeah. But it was off the lot. But so to park on the lot was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. It was once again, it was like a real, you know, humbling moment, I guess, after so many years of just rolling straight onto a lot and parking and like going into work. That when the show ended and I started to audition again, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I have to park in the structure and walk across a lot in heels? Who thought of this?
Oh, yes. Yes.
This is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Now I'm sweaty and I'm wearing this like outfit and like.
And they're about to put me on tape and I'm going to be all shiny. Yeah. Because it's very, again, it's straight out of the movies. You drive up to the guard gate, you know, the guard, you know, right. Hey, Biff. Hey, good morning, Christine. He lets you in. You know, he opens the, open up the arm for you, you know, lets you drive onto the lot.
Yep.
You drive along to your stage. You park in your spot with your name on it. I mean, it really is like the movies. But yes, afterwards, when you're out there hustling and auditioning for stuff, oh, yeah.
It's a harsh reality.
Right. Although oftentimes, like, I will say, as you're tootling across the lot, especially if you are dolled up in some kind of ridiculous outfit for this audition, there will be some nice crew member who takes pity on you, who's driving by in their golf cart.
Yes.
And offers you a ride.
Every so often.
Yes. And then we'll drive you all the way over to whatever random building you have to be in as you're teetering along painfully.
Like, with this dumb map that they've given you that's like a copy of a copy, and you're trying to figure out where you're going.
Right. And they took their ballpoint pen and they drove you this route and you're trying, you know, or drew you this route. Again, I can't talk today.
You know, we had those parking passes that were laminated.
Yeah.
And you'd like stick them in the window.
Yeah.
Even though we mostly knew people at that point.
They right.
Kind of let you
wave you in.
We were supposed to turn those parking passes in at the end. I didn't turn mine in.
You didn't turn yours in?
It was like a little bit of nostalgia, but I was also like, I don't want to turn it in.
For purposes of auditions, you know.
Next year, anytime I went to Warner Brothers, I'm horrible. I would just use it.
Really?
I would like park somewhere random. On the lot.
So you would drive onto the lot then just park somewhere. Ooh,
yep.
I don't think you could do that today.
Hell no.
And finally, it wouldn't just be some laminated piece of paper, right? I mean, nowadays they're going to have some kind of transponder or something.
And you have to show your ID and you're on. No,
right.
it's a whole thing. And especially at Sony now, there's badges and it's all like electronic. You have to
just
wave your badge.
Scan
in
your way
thing.
In.
Yeah. I kept that dumb thing and I would just like get myself on the lot and go park somewhere and be like, no one ever checks parking over here. And then I would just like go to my audition. Ugh. And finally, I think after a year, I got on. They were like, okay, this is expired. We need to confiscate. This is the last
laminated
time you can come onto the lot like this.
And paper
like,
passes are pink now and yours is yellow. Okay. So we're on to you
God,
3 years
I was
later.
Trying to get away with something that was me.
Yeah.
I know.
Good for you, man.
Thanks.
You might
know,
as well.
Just really working the system any way I could.
Ride that pass out as long as you can. Because, yeah, when you're auditioning, no one cares about you. Nobody cares.
No. And it really is. It's a whole thing. You know, you have to really get very intimate with the lots to figure out where you're going, how you're parking, where you park. It takes like half an hour just to like park and walk down that structure and walk across a lot to get where it's like a whole thing.
I remember auditioning one time for a commercial agent. This was after the show.
Auditioning for a commercial agent? What are you doing?
So in other words, you
holding up products?
There are different types of agents, right? You might have your theatrical agent. You might have an agent for voiceover if you do voiceover.
Right.
And if you are interested in auditioning for commercials, you might have a commercial agent and they represent you only in that arena. So this commercial agent, so, you know, despite being on, you know, a TV show for all these years and stuff, they wanted me to audition for them.
Did you have to do a monologue?
Well, so I get there and we were told we could park in the lot. And this particular place was over in this funny area, kind of adjacent to Hollywood. And it was a building that had its own parking lot. And we were told you could park in the parking lot. So then there's me and there's a bunch of other actors and we're waiting to be seen by this agent. And this receptionist comes in and she says, okay, any actors who are here that have parked in the lot, you all need, we need the lot clear. Everyone needs to move their cars. Okay. I mean, they told us that we could park there. Now we were getting evicted. So now everyone had to go get their cars, figure out where in this weird hilly area you're going to park your car that's not in their precious parking lot. So then I come back in. The agent is this guy. He's probably, I don't know, late 20s, early 30s. He is flanked by these two female assistants that are probably early 20s, very dolled up, very done up, both very pretty, you know, hair and lashes and all this. And it just, it looked ridiculous. First of all, why do you need two assistants? And if you do, are you literally going to sit there, this man, and have these two women flank you, one on either side, kind of bookends? It was just nasty. And then they made me read. They made me read a commercial, you know, for Dawn dish soap or whatever it is. And I just remember sitting there thinking, and I mean, we had already had a conversation and they knew, you know, what I had done before in my previous jobs and stuff like that. And I just thought, why are you having me do this? Is this supposed to be embarrassing? I mean, after, I don't know, 160 some episodes of this TV show, do you doubt whether I can read 4 lines of copy about Dawn dish soap? I mean, just the way this industry is.
It sounds like a huge power trip to me.
I think it was. And then they agreed to take me on. Lucky me.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, as part of this whole process, me and the other actors were given this huge lecture about how, you know, if we agree to work with you, if we get you an audition, I don't care if you're 3.5 hours into the drive to Vegas. If we call you and tell you we have an audition for you, you turn the car around and come back. Literally. And just to give you an idea, Vegas is a 4-hour drive at the shortest possible. If you're flying the entire way from LA to Vegas is a 4-hour drive. So that was their thing, that you, in other words, you don't have a life. If we get you an audition, you cancel everything. You better be there. And if you don't, we're going to have a serious issue.
Wow.
So between the parking and the audition and this dude and his two assistants and this whole spiel.
That sounds like a nightmare.
They called and said that they were willing to work with me.
Sounds like a cult, kind of.
I wrote an email saying, thank you, but I'm not interested.
Good for
you. I'm going to go a different direction. And there was no response. There wasn't even that kind of curt sort of fake professional, well, good luck to you then.
Right.
It was just silence. It was just kind of a silent F you, as if to say, how dare you?
I'm sure.
We are willing to work with you. And I mean, but they were treating people crappy before the professional relationship even started.
Yes.
It was bad.
It's bad. Listen, I've had so many agents over the course of my career, and there's something that I think is that remains just with, I don't think it's changed all that much. I mean, that sounds very extreme, but I will say at the end of the day, I have always generated so much of my own work.
Yeah.
And
you're very good.
I have all these hands in different parts of the biz, right?
Whether I'm talented.
Yeah, you know, I've been selling shows or writing, directing. I've done hosting. I've done voiceover.
And voiceover, choreography, directing.
And so many of those things were like things that I self-generated from either, you know, opportunities I had or deciding that maybe I could, you know, make a career out of this or that. I have a lot of mentors in my life who have told me it's always good to be a multi-hyphenate because you always have work. And there is a lot of truth to that. And when you talk to a representative, an agent, you say, yes, and I just want to let you know, I also do all these other things. And they're like, that's so exciting. Oh my God, that's so great. And that's so smart. And it's so awesome. At the end of the day, the only thing that agent cares about is whether they're making their paycheck off the thing that they do.
Right.
So if I'm off directing a television series and I can't audition for something, I've gotten a lot of, hey, here's an audition. We need you to self-tape this by tomorrow. And I'm like, I'm directing High School Musical. Like, I'm working 16 hours today. It's not possible. I've gotten a lot of like pushback and resistance.
Yeah.
Because, and I understand it. I've like, you know, thoughtfully, I understand it because that's not the lane that they're in. But there's really very little empathy for a person's career anymore. I feel like unless you have one of those old school agents who has stuck by you for a very long time and gets who you are and really understands you. And I feel like agents maybe used to be more like that. You know, you talk to people or you see them on a stage, they win an award and they say, my agent of 25 years, yeah, or my manager of 30 years.
Yeah.
And I think there are these special relationships. But for me, what I have experienced a lot of is I'm going to give you a shot. And if you don't do what I ask you to do and you don't bring me a paycheck, I'm done.
Yeah, it's
like a meat grinder.
It's the industry. Well, I have kind of a memorable manager story for you. Why don't we take a break and we'll come back with that.
Juicy. Deja vu.
And we're back. So I was looking for, I think it was a manager at this point, and somebody hooked me up with a meeting with their manager, which is a big deal. Oftentimes, sure, as an actor, you know, let's say you're on a TV show, you have friends who are also actors and they're looking, you know, to make it to the next thing. And they see you on a TV show and they think that you just have all this power. You have all this, you know, so they'll say, oh, hook me up with your agent, hook me up with your manager. Can you right. set me up a meeting with them? And I think most of the time, most actors feel like they are barely in good themselves with their agent or their yes. manager, much less having the power or the juice to say, hey, meet my friend. He's great. You know, it's such a fraught relationship. And, you know, even being on a TV show, half the time you feel like you're, quote, on the bubble. They might drop you. Who knows, right. you know? Because, by the way, the agent that you're with today may not be the agent who's collecting a portion of the salary
commission
from that show. Maybe your previous agent got you that gig.
Right.
So just an added wrinkle to that dynamic. But anyway, so somebody set me up with this manager and, you know, the thing that they said about her was, oh, you know, she's a bulldog. She really gets out there. She really fights for her people, you know, so, but it was really nice of this actor friend of mine to hook me up with her and to get me this meeting with her. So I go to meet with her. She's, you know, this older gal, you know, she's kind of a broad. She's bold and brassy. She's got the smoker's voice and the whole thing.
She already reminds me of Joey Tribbiani's agent from Friends.
Oh,
like, Joey, come in here.
Yeah, kind of like that. And so, you know, she's probably, I don't know, in her early 60s or something. So we sit down. Within the first 5 minutes, she is telling me about her dating life.
Oh, no.
And she's telling me how, and this is a quote because I remember this, because how could I forget? She goes, you know, I date men my own age. You know, I age appropriate. And I remember sitting there in this office with this woman going, what planet are we on? This is another one of those moments of what is this industry that we are in? I have never met this woman. We don't know each other at all. Sorry, if you're hearing sounds again, Jurassic Park sounds in the background. That's my dog. He's our emotional support dinosaur yes. in the background. What industry do you have this? What world is this where someone would... We don't know each other.
No.
And I'm there to see if there might be any chance that she would want to be my manager.
But also, like, to represent your interests and who you are as an actor. And she's right. This is what she's telling you
and
on
now,
the first 5 minutes?
We were not even 5 minutes in. And we're talking about who she's dating. And as she put it, who she f***s and whether or not they're age appropriate. I still think about it and go, wow, what an industry I was in. What world is that?
What world indeed?
Spoiler alert, she ultimately decided not to work with me.
Oh, well, I think you dodged a real bullet there.
Yeah, her line was she had to ask around and kind of find out, you know, what my reputation was or something. I think she decided within the first few minutes.
Probably when she saw your face after she said that.
Well, and her clients were all men. They were all men, and not for nothing. They were mostly men that were younger than her, good looking dudes.
Right.
I don't think there was any chance she was ever, she just didn't really do actresses, period.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah. There's a couple choice manager stories. When I was in my, probably like 18, 19, I was coming off the show. There was an agent, a young agent. He was at a top, you know, sort of agenting place, a firm, and he had
one of the big names,
yeah,
one of the blue chips. Names.
And but he was a young, up and coming, very hot agent. And he came to my acting class, and my manager at the time, who was also my acting teacher and had been for many years, she managed like a small group of us, like Nicole Tom, and she managed Allison Mack back in the day, and Kelly. She used to manage Kelly Martin, and anyway, so she had she was like very legit, but also had this really great underpinning of being a mentor and an acting teacher to many people, to many young actors. But she had kind of taken this young agent sort of under her wing a little bit. They shared a client, and she would tell me, "Oh, you know, I mean, I think he came to acting class. He's just in love with you. He's in love with you. He thinks you're so talented. But I think he actually might have a crush on you." And I was like, well, that's awkward because I'm like 18 and he's like 25 and I'm not in by any means attracted to him. And
if there's some inkling murky, that he's going to be your agent,
like, are we auditioning for him? I think I went to the Young Hollywood Awards with him.
It was just
very odd. And then I quickly realized, oh, I actually think he's gay and he doesn't want people to think that.
Oh, he wanted you to be the beard.
He wanted me to be the beard. Yeah.
Okay. But at least, I mean, already that's at least more favorable because he's not going to try to jump office.
And didn't.
Hopefully.
But yet would make these, it was very awkward for him because I saw everything very clearly and he was still saying these things of like, oh, I would want to marry her one day. She's just so wonderful. And no, no, dude, no. I felt very awkward about it all the time.
So while me and my real husband, Rick, are summering in Switzerland, she can be my wife back at the house holding down appearances.
God, it was so awkward. And we would go to these Young Hollywood Awards. And I'm sitting there thinking like, this is the dregs. Like, this isn't a real award show. You had to pay to, like, even go to this dumb thing. Mm-hmm. Why is anybody going? It all felt like a scam. But he, like, worked at this big agency, so I was going. It was just, yeah, very weird and bizarre. And these were the kinds of things that happened. So dumb. What a waste of time.
So I don't know, being exposed to all that at a young age, I don't know if that makes us better or worse. You know, on the one hand, you've seen it, you've encountered it, you've maybe mishandled it or not, but then you're kind of coming of age in this hothouse environment that has so many sick and weird. I mean, I guess having somebody want, you know, you to be their beard is not the sickest and worst thing. Not even close.
No.
But it's just when you're 18, it's kind of.
But there was still, I mean, I didn't want to go to these things with him, but I kind of also felt like I had to. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I didn't want to piss him off. Because he was someone who could maybe help me.
Yeah. Oh, what a dynamic.
That's an all too often the dynamic. I also had a manager tell me, I think she was my agent. I showed her this short film I had done and we were deciding what to put on my reel. And there was one shot that was like from the side and she commented on like what my neck. I was literally 22 years old.
She commented on your neck?
Commented.
What do you mean?
On like under my chin that it was unflattering. That was a bad angle and I needed to watch that. And for the next 10 years, and probably even still now, I have this sort of anxiety about being photographed from the side because I have what Ally McBeal would call, I guess from Ally McBeal would be like the wiggle under the chin or something. I thought that when I was 22 years old.
You do? No, you don't.
I was like, I need liposuction on my, I think I need liposuction underneath my chin.
I have
a fatty chin.
It makes you absolutely crazy. I remember my mom watching a short that I did. It was independent. It was, you know, a friend from acting class. He asked me to be in this thing. I did it. It was shot in black and white. And I showed it to my mom and she was sitting there watching it. And she goes, she's sitting there smoking her cigarette on the couch. And she goes, why are we watching these two ugly people?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah. So whether it's someone giving you a complex about your chin or just your mom telling you that you're ugly on film, you know, it's these things that can kind of warp. Because, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Lakin in the flesh right now. She's very fit. She's very healthy. And I don't see any kind of, I mean, not that you can't be healthy and still have a wiggle under your chin, but she just happens to not have that. So I'm really not sure what that was about.
Gave me a total complex.
But yeah, it, because you're on film all the time. You know, actors get accused of being shallow or, you know, being vain, but you have to be how you look all the time. And think of it, your skin, your eyebrows, your hair, your weight, the body, all of it.
It's just like a never ending. I think for, and especially as actresses get older, I look at some of my friends who are still out there and like pounding the pavement and auditioning all the time. And it just all seems exhausting. The amount of upkeep, the hair, the Botox, the eyebrows, the makeup. It's just an exhausting, never-ending feat that I am eventually, and that was one of the other reasons why I'm just not that interested in keeping up with the Joneses of that genre. I'm just not really interested in that. I don't know that I want to have a frozen face.
No.
In order to be on television.
I cannot. It's just.
And I'm telling you, no one has expressly told me that that's what I need to do, but I understand the implications of not doing that. And when you are when you're going out with your contemporaries for a certain role and everybody is trying to look at least 5 years younger than they already are, that's just the reality.
Yeah. And of course, men don't get that.
No.
No one is talking about George Clooney, you know, needing a facelift or needing Botox. I mean, I remember seeing a thing about, it was not Ben Affleck, it was Vince Vaughn. And it was him, it was paparazzi shots of him cavorting in the water in Hawaii somewhere on some vacation. Like someone had a long lens and they captured him out there. And he was, you know, having a moment where he was a little heavier. So it's just him in swim trunks and no shirt. And the paparazzi comment was the headline in this, you know, rag, whatever it was, this tabloid was, or it might have even been an Us Weekly or one of those things where they just cover celebrity news. Vince Vaughn and his golden acres, referring to him being a little heavier at that moment.
Golden acres?
Yeah.
What does that mean? What is that meant to mean?
So, and I still think about this.
Or golden or something?
His tummy, basically. It was so funny because they wanted to snarkily comment on him being heavy.
Uh-huh.
But he was a man. So they weren't going to write all the stuff that they write about, you know, Sandra Bullock's
blowing up
cellulite scandal, you know, and then the horrible photos that they print of women.
Horrible.
Captured in bathing suits by paparazzi, you know, when they think, God forbid, they have some privacy. Mm-hmm. But I just thought, wow, when you're a man, you get golden acres.
Gross.
And when you're a woman, you get, you know, look at those stretch marks and the cellulite and the fat. And oh, she ballooned up. And I mean, now we're in a different time a little bit where suddenly, you know, things are changing in the media in terms of women's bodies and, you know, these campaigns. And now you shop online on Victoria's Secret and you see, you know, real, you know, different size bodies, different shape bodies. They're leaving the stretch marks in. They're leaving even some cellulite in because we're suddenly reaching this moment of, oh, wow, maybe if we don't destroy any chance of a woman having any kind of reasonable, realistic relationship with her own body or wasting her entire life, hating her body. What world could we create? But that didn't used to be, case.
I often think too, we were talking about my friends and I were talking about this show, Hacks, the other day.
Love that show.
I love that show
love
too.
It.
It's so good.
So good.
And the lead actress in it,
Absolutely love her. Jean Smart.
She is so good in it. She's an amazing actress. And she's she's great in everything she's done in her career. This has especially been, I think, a really wonderful role for her.
Yeah.
And obviously she's playing sort of a
Joan Rivers type. Trailblazing. Yes. Female comedian.
Yes. So there's a degree of her having this aura about herself that is very glamorous.
And she's rich and she's fancy. And but she wears also wigs. Vulnerable.
Yes, exactly. We were having this conversation and a friend of mine said something like, we were just waxing poetic on how much we love her. And she said, gosh, she looks so great. She still looks so great. And she wasn't wrong. She does. She looks great. Whoever does her plastic surgery, because I'm sure she's had a facelift, you know, that's who I'd want to do mine if I ever got one. Hmm. And I thought to myself, yeah, and she probably has. And also, we still comment on the fact that someone we love looks great. Like, still, just the fact that we even
still
that we're still commenting. I'm not saying I watched this George Clooney movie and, by the way, he still looks so great.
He still looks
good. I would never say that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. My spidey sense goes up when we say that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's so often that even behind the scenes, someone will bring up an actress and they'll say, but how does she look these days? And I wonder how often they do that for men. My guess is not nearly as often as they do for women.
Right. Maybe if the man is supposed to be playing the hunky older guy or whatever, the hunky role, whatever that may be. But
I mean, if you're going to cast a 45-year-old or 60-year-old woman, that's what you're casting that age. But yet we're still asking, but they look great. And she looks great right now. She looks great right now.
Right now.
Right now,
as if she's about to fall off a cliff. I mean, the new Barbie movie that's coming out, Ryan Gosling is what, 45? And he's playing Ken. Mm-hmm. And Margot Robbie, who's playing Barbie, is 30. So just to give you some kind of idea. And no one is, you know, if that was a 45-year-old actress playing Barbie, I think there would be some eyebrows being raised. Perhaps, maybe I'm wrong, but
I'm not into it anymore. I'm done with the, you know, Anne Heche, Harrison Ford pairing. I feel like that was such a thing that happened in the 90s where these men who were in their like 40s or 50s were being paired with these women in their 20s as love interests. And that's
What was the movie where Nicole Kidman just played the mother of the very stunning Mr. Skarsgård, who is, I don't know, 15 years younger than her?
Wait.
It was that Viking movie. She played his mom.
What?
Yes.
But didn't they play husband and wife in Big Little Lies?
Oh my God. Yes, they did.
How is
Okay, we may need to marinate on that because I didn't even think about that, but
that
you're
is
right.
Not okay.
Okay, well, let's.
Okay, we're still making bad decisions.
This is a big issue.
Guys.
We're not going to solve this today. I do think we should come back to this.
Yeah, we need,
especially considering we grew up in this mess. So why don't we talk about next week?
Yeah, let's do that. Next week we are going to be breaking down season 1, episode 10, entitled Mixed Messages. Thanks for listening. I'm Christine Lakin.
And I'm Stacey Keenan.
And we hope we've given you deja vu. Until next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. You can write us at keenanandlakin@gmail.com and follow us on social at @keenanandlakin. Big shout out to our producer and editor, Stephen Ray Morris. We love you dearly.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.